Greetings, Sun Sounds listeners, and welcome to the Philosopher Program. This is your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis, along with my co-host, Bullet Lewis. We begin our program with some daily selections from Science of Mind, Guide for Spiritual Living. The theme again this month has been In Living Color, Dreaming in Living Color. Dreams are the spark that ignites our souls and pushes us to achieve the impossible. Charo. Let us feel that our purposes are animated and inspired from on high, and then let us go forth and make our dream come true in human experience. Ernest Holmes, The Science of Mind, page 477.4. In our youth, many of us had wild imaginative dreams of what we wanted to be, do, and have. We came up with the fantastic ways we were going to roam around and change the world. Then it happened. The dreaming halted, and the conditioning took hold and forced us to relinquish our dreams in favor of something more realistic. When an idea is too big to be held in the box of conformity, it becomes a dream. Your healing, your power, your purpose, and your divine expression are the dreams of the universe. CSL's entire global vision statement is a dream waiting to be birthed into manifestation, only to give way to yet another dream and another and another. That is the nature of an ever-expanding spirit, individualizing as us, and how we live by being open at the top and the bottom. What are you willing to dream today? Even if you feel insecure about it, dream. Even if it scares you, dream. Even if you hear yourself asking, what is the point? Dream. When we reclaim the power of our dreams, we reclaim our power to eradicate war, famine, injustice, racism, sexism, gender bias, ageism, ableism, toxic capitalism, and more. Our dreams are key ingredients that inspire global evolution. The University of Pittsburgh's website recounts a story about how Einstein, at the age of 16, imagined chasing after a beam of light. That thought experiment played a memorable role in his development of special relativity. Like Einstein, we can dream and call those things that do not exist as though they did, and make them so. Affirmation. Knowing that my words create, my thoughts create, my actions create, I consciously choose to create as the power of my dreams inspire me to create. Living beyond the beyond. I'm not saying get rid of those 12 notes. I love what music has done and what it will be. But as a musician who is concerned about music, I say, what's beyond those 12 notes? Yatasha L. Womack, Afrofuturism, the World of Black Sci-Fi and Fantasy Culture. The stars in the heavens are beyond counting. The grains of sand on the beaches are innumerable. The leaves on the trees continue to multiply. Nature is lavish, abundant, and extravagant. Ernest Holmes, Discover a Richer Life, page 54.1. If the universe is as Holmes describes, why do we spend so much time erecting walls of limitation? Do we believe what he said? We live based on our beliefs, whether conscious or subconscious. Are we willing to excavate and examine our beliefs to arrive at a more expansive experience of spiritual truth? Have you ever been asked to rate something on a scale of 0 to 10? At some point, I realized I wanted to know if something was beyond 10, and if so, I wanted to experience it. Living beyond the beyond, what I refer to as trans-spiritual living, is living beyond the boundary someone else set for us. As Yatasha L. Womack asks, what's beyond those 12 notes? If we do not question what is beyond the current operating systems, how can we ever evolve and create a world that works for all? As a quote often attributed to Einstein says, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And this is not just the day-to-day systems of politics, education, or healthcare. I'm also referring to going beyond an anthropomorphic God. A trans-spiritual life is one where we take to heart Holmes' words, for the only God you and I will ever know is the one we embody. Never forget that. Accepting that, we can move beyond the idea of a God that exists somewhere out there to the embodiment of God right here. Affirmation. I create using new notes, new colors, new ideas, and new systemic ways of being that have equity, justice, belonging, compassion, health, and wellness as their foundation. We turn now to the Daily Word published by Unity. Guidance. With an open heart and mind, I heed divine guidance. If I'm feeling lost or do not know which way to turn, I take comfort in knowing I can pray and bring my awareness to my connection with God, Spirit, the universe. Wherever I am on my spiritual journey, I receive divine guidance continually, and it is up to me to heed it. Divine guidance does me little good if I doubt it or feel too hesitant to act upon it. I commit to remaining open and receptive as I receive my guidance. Even if the call of my heart surprises me, even if I doubt I can do what I'm being called to do, I trust the still small voice within. I affirm, I am divinely guided and faith-filled. Vitality. My life is God's, Spirit's, the universe's life, living as me. Awakening from sleep, I become aware of the life energy throughout my body. Life is one of the divine qualities that is mine to use because I am a living expression of God, of Spirit, of the universe. I celebrate the divine gift of life by living joyously. Wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, I know God, Spirit, the universe, is with me. If I'm not feeling well, I restore vitality by filling my mind with life-affirming thoughts, thanking my body for serving me well, and caring for my physical health with the right balance of rest, exercise, and healthy nutrition. When I pray for another person's healing, in my mind's eye, I see divine life shining in their every cell, replacing anything unlike itself. Divine vitality harmonizes and renews them in body, mind, and soul. We turn now to Mark Nepo's The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have, Spirit and Psychology. Even the clearest water seems opaque at great depth. Joel Agee. Each of us is like a great untamed sea, obedient to deeper currents that are seldom visible. Knowing this gives us three insights worth keeping in our awareness. First, we must consider that the deepest patch of ocean is as clear as its surface wave, though it remains unseeable to the human eye that bobs above it. Second, how far we can see into the deep depends on the calmness or turbulence of the surface. And third, just as the depth and surface of the sea are inseparable, so too are the spirit and psychology of each human being. It is our deep-sounding, untamed currents that cause us to rise and swell, dip and crash. Yet that base of spirit remains unaffected by the storms that churn up the surface. It obeys a deeper order. Still, we as beings living in the world are always subject to both, the depth and the surface, our spirit and our psychology. Though we can never see all the way to bottom, on clear days when our psychology is calm, we can know the depth that carries us. When free of turbulence and anxiety, we can know the ocean of God that swells within. So, in love, in relationship, in the brief clarity that living gives rise to, I see all the way through you as far as my sight can go, and am forever changed. Then the winds come from the east, and suddenly you're all churned up. Your depth seems blocked, and I wonder who you are. This happens in the course of knowing oneself as well. It is unavoidable. Watch any patch of sea. It is never completely still. Even when calm, it reflects everything as it spreads and never vanishes. So too are feelings which keep changing in the light. The degree to which we are clear and seeable depends on how calm we are and how calm the day. But we are never cut off from our spirit any more than the surface wave is cut off from the ocean floor. Fear of living often comes when we place all our energy into the moment of the wave, into the turbulent moment of our psychology. If revelation is the brief experience of seeing through the surface into ourselves or others, then wisdom is the recall of that seeing when the waters are murky. Fill a clear dish that is both wide and deep with water. Stir it with your hand, and in silence, watch it settle. Do this several times while thinking about the storms in your life that are churning up your mind. The last two times, notice the water at the bottom and how it is less affected by what stirs up the surface. We return to Science of Mind, and we start with a second question from Reverend Dr. Jesse Jennings and his questions and answers. Your story is a spectrum. Genesis 2:17 reads, "But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die." Can this be interpreted metaphysically? Answer. Any story can be interpreted metaphysically, but we must understand that the result is always highly subjective to the mind that's doing the interpreting. Never is there just one correct meaning. A story is a spectrum revealing different hues and tints depending on the angle of the light we bring to it. That said, the passage you've chosen is traditionally taken as God's instruction to Adam and Eve, foreshadowing their disobedience of same, by which they and everyone since then were thrown into a state of original sin. There are many other ways of looking at this. If you don't choose to believe in a God who sets people up to fail by exploiting their natural curiosity, much less one who desires to condemn, and disproportionately too, its own creation, here is one of those ways of looking. It's highly unlikely there were two original humans who just arrived, one from the dust, the other from a rib, to spawn our species. The story is about generic humankind, not a specific couple. For anyone to gain a knowledge of good and evil, or any apparent pair of opposites, they must first have a mental and neurological capacity to discern self from other. We see this develop in infants as they begin to discern that they are distant from their environments. The fruit of the tree is self-awareness, and with the coming of self-awareness, something dies. Innocence, or more precisely what biblical scholar Marcus Borg called pre-critical naivete. Our eyes are opened and we are ashamed at the self that we see, not because there's anything innately wrong with us or even over guilt for misbehavior, but because we now possess the capacity to compare states of being and pass judgment. Our healing comes when we learn to use our judgment wisely and sparingly. A story is a spectrum revealing different hues and tints depending on the angle of the light we bring to it. And from this same issue, we turn to an article by Ernest Holmes, How to Increase Your Good. If you could show how to make three blades of grass grow where only two had grown before, you would be adding to the wealth of the world. If you could show someone how to increase their good, you would be adding a lot to their prosperity and happiness. Well, one of our leading universities has done something very much like this. They planted two plots of grain under equal circumstances, the same soil, sun, air, and fertilizer, and the same care. A chosen group of people praised one plot of grain and condemned the other. They praised and blessed plot of grain showed so much more vitality and life than the one blamed. The scientists were satisfied that a definite principle was involved. Is this any different from you and I praying for each other or blessing each other? Of course not. You will remember that Jesus blessed the bread before he multiplied it, and you will also remember that in a certain incident, when Jesus and his disciples were walking down the roadside, they came to a fig tree that bore no fruit. Jesus condemned the tree, saying that it would bear no fruit from then on because it was unproductive. A short time later, when he and his disciples returned, they found the fig tree had withered away. How many of us bless our physical bodies or our financial affairs? How many of us bless our friendships and our social relations? How many of us bless everything we do and all those we contact? Blessing increases our good. What a wonderful thing to realize there is such a power of blessing that you and I can increase our good through the simple and silent process of loving and blessing everything around us. We should love ourselves because we are God, Spirit, the universe, in action. We should love our neighbors because they are God in action. Love and blessing are identical principles in nature. If you and I want to increase and multiply such talents as we have, we must do the three things. We must use them, we must bless them, and we must expect an increase. Someone might say, what an idle sentiment. Well, what is more practical than being well and happy and successful? It will yet be discovered that the great ideals laid down by Jesus are the most practical things on earth, and it is up to you and me to begin right where we are and prove that he knew what he was talking about. Are we entering into the more abundant life? Are we exercising such faith as we have? Are we living in continual expectancy of being guided into right action? And do we live with enthusiastic hope? Let's begin right where we are. The trouble with the world today is that it is trying to live without God, without hope, without faith, and someone has to begin. Suppose this someone is you and is me. Suppose we just start right where we are in our little lives and daily affirm that God, Spirit, the universe, is all there is, that good must finally triumph, that faith can produce results, and that love is an all-conquering power. Let's not wait for great events or something to happen outside us to change everything. Let's begin today to remold our whole thinking. This is going to call for faith and perseverance and fortitude. It is going to call for a persistency of effort and a certain flexible determination to see the thing through to a final conclusion. Watch yourself carefully for one whole day and see how many times you make negative statements about yourself, perhaps in a simple way as saying, nothing comes out right for me. Isn't this condemning your little plot of grain? How can it multiply and increase under condemnation? Every time you find yourself making a negative statement about yourself, just reverse it, using the positive affirmation that things are coming out right, that there is a divine intelligence governing and directing your efforts, and have faith in this intelligence. If there's enough intelligence in a little plot of grain to respond to someone's thought when they bless it, then there is enough intelligence in your affairs to respond to you when you bless them. There is enough intelligence in your body to respond to you when you bless it. Silently bless everything you do. What is more wonderful than this human body life has given us? Somewhere within you and within me is the builder of this body. This builder isn't our human thought at all. It is God, Spirit, the universe, the living Spirit. It is this God we should learn to recognize in every action and function of this physical being of ours. We should praise the circulation and bless every organ of our physical being, assuring it that the divine architect, the infinite chemist, the perfect maker of all things designed it and knows how to run it. If there is a principle in life that makes it possible for a group of people to praise a plot of grain and have it respond, then there is a principle in life that responds to us when we bless one another. Let's make it a habit then to silently bless everything we do, ourselves, everyone around us, and all the activities we engage in. And just as the loaves and fishes multiplied when Jesus broke them and blessed them, so will everything we do multiply as we bless it and distribute the good we receive to those around us. You and I are engaged in the most fascinating experiment we shall ever make, the experiment of proving the power of our own faith in good. And we should enter into this experiment with joy and thanksgiving, with praise and blessing. Isn't it wonderful to realize that this power is already within us, that nothing can rob us of it? It will not depart from us. It will eternally grow and expand, that there is no limit to its possibility. Let's start right now, today, and not wait, and let's silently bless and praise our efforts, our physical bodies, all of our affairs, and the people around us. Let's bless the love that goes from us to them, not even wondering if it will return, for life already ordained that everything moves in circles, so that which goes out will come back again. How to Increase Your Good was a talk given by Ernest Holmes on his radio show, This Thing Called Life, on December 31st, 1950. Visit the Science of Mind Archives and Library Foundation's website to find an abundance of treasures. Science of Mind Archives, all one word, .com. And from this same issue, Reverend Dr. David Alexander's monthly column, Philosophy in Action, The Great Discovery of Your Life. This month, Ernest Holmes gives us some practical and powerful insights into living a life of fulfillment from divine wisdom. The right attitude toward life is essential in the effort to manifest a life of good. We know that attitude, or the activity of our thinking, shapes what we see, perceive, and experience, and therefore the quality of our life experience itself. Holmes was speaking in a Christian world context, and as such, we often find him explaining the life and teachings of Jesus in ways that were quite revelatory to his audience. He respected Jesus as a teacher and liberator of thinking, rather than as a symbol of dogmatic tradition and restrictive thoughts. As such, his first suggestion in living from divine wisdom is to reclaim the simple wisdom of Jesus, whether you identify as Christian or not. Jesus taught universal truth. This wisdom is not about elaborate rules of judgment or of life and the hereafter. Instead, it is about a radical presence in this moment. The first step in living from divine wisdom is about alignment, or at-one-ment. It is about choosing to operate from a place of oneness and alignment with a higher power. The next step is knowing that divine guidance is instantly available once you operate from this alignment. You are never alone in any challenges you face. There is always the deep wisdom of the universe available to guide you. Most of us seek and desire some guidance through life at some point, yet our minds are often too crowded with thoughts of fear, judgment, or doubt. The still small voice of infinite intelligence is always on standby the moment we get quiet and still enough to hear it. The third and final step is to know there is a unique self that seeks to emerge in your life. Too often we spend our lives impersonating the people or traits we think others want or expect, but this will never lead to happiness or success. The greatest discovery in life is to know there is a unique manifestation of the divine that only knows itself as you. Use your steps of alignment and divine guidance to tune into that unique self and make the decision to live from that place. Travel well. We turn now to the May-June 2025 issue of Spirituality and Health, a Unity publication, and an article by Kelly Keller, Sacred Journeys, From Fear to Freedom. Climbing Angel's Landing, I discovered that peace and clarity come not from attempting to control life, but from surrendering to the divine within. Standing at the base of Angel's Landing in Utah's Zion National Park at 4 a.m., I felt the icy pre-dawn darkness of New Year's Day wrap around me. I wondered if this climb might finally help me shed the weight of the year I thought would break me and answer some of the big life questions that had been consuming me. It felt like a last resort. If this, something that combined my passion for outdoor adventure with the love of my family, didn't bring me clarity, I wasn't sure what would. It was winter of 2020, and I was exhausted. We all were. Fighting quarantines, death, sickness, and uncertainty on top of life's normal struggles at 20 years old had left me searching for meaning in a world that felt increasingly unclear. On paper, I had it better than most. I hadn't lost loved ones directly to the virus, and I was fortunate to attend school in person, surrounded by my friends, and the structure of collegiate athletics that was once an obligation but was now seen as a privilege. But off paper, I was desperate. I had been a spiritual seeker, believing in a higher power only when it was convenient. It was just enough to keep skepticism and existential dread from swallowing me whole. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was missing something. There had to be clarity just around the corner, right? Sequence of switchbacks. The hike began in total darkness. My family and I started on the Grotto Trail, which weaves through massive rock walls, and each uphill step pulled us further into the silence. The air was crisp and the ground underneath us was frozen. The world around us was as still as if time had stopped. It felt surreal to be out here in the early hours when everything in my life was moving too fast, weighed down by the heaviness of all my uncertainty. As we ascended, my breath quickened and my body awoke from sleepiness, but my mind never stopped. It kept looping through fears, doubts, and self-questioning. I wondered what I was even searching for. I had never allowed this much silent time with just me and my thoughts. I usually just distracted myself with TV, scrolling, or complete avoidance. But here, that wasn't an option. When we hit the first major switchback, I started to feel the pressure of the climb, not just physically, but also mentally. Every step felt like it was pulling me deeper into myself, forcing me to face thoughts I had been avoiding. I thought about the question of faith, about whether I had been holding myself back from truly surrendering to something greater. Could this climb be a kind of prayer in itself, or was it simply a way to numb myself to the noise of the world around me? I was no stranger to the just put one foot in front of the other concept of life. I realized I'd been doing nothing but that for 20 years. Here on the trail, this had gotten me 4 hours of looking at the ground trying to complete this hike. I stopped and forced myself to look up and take a glance around. I was surrounded by sheer cliffs, thousands of trees, and incredible natural beauty. Suddenly, I was filled with the knowing that I wanted more out of life. I still had a million questions. Does everyone experience this? Is God trying to show me something? But for the first time, those questions were not yelling at me. It was quiet. Is this what relief feels like? I didn't realize how heavy I felt until I lightened my load. But what will it be like when the heaviness comes back? Would I feel hit by a truck all over again? I chose to remain optimistic. More questions came. How do I pray? Have I been doing it wrong? Is praying only in times of desperation wrong? What are we doing here? My family and I did not talk much while on this trail. It was not a trek filled with deep group connection. I could tell we were all fighting our own battles up here. My heart was beating fast, my blood was pumping, and my adrenaline was spiking, just the way I like it. I just didn't realize this meant I was a little too comfortable in survival mode. As we neared the final, notoriously difficult stretch of the hike, I found myself paralyzed by the sudden awareness of just how high up we were. The path narrowed to a ridge a few feet wide with steep drops on both sides. The chains hikers used to help pull themselves up the steepest bits were slick with ice, forcing us to rely on sure footing and tight grips. The air felt thinner. In that moment, it wasn't just the physical fear that struck me. It was the realization that I had been living my life in a similar way. I'd always been afraid of the heights and the unknown, and I'd been clinging to what felt safe, even though it didn't fulfill me. It was as if I'd been holding on to the edges of life, afraid to fully experience it, afraid to trust, consumed by the big questions. Now or never. I told myself to breathe. I focused on each step. I wasn't sure if I could do it, but I couldn't stop. I wondered if spirit would catch me if I slipped. Is that the way it works? If so, then why does it still happen to people? There is divine intervention all around us. Do I need to look for signs? So many rabbit holes to go down. The chain was cold, and I grasped it with a sense of urgency. My hands shook. My legs felt like jelly. But something inside me kept moving forward. I realized that faith wasn't about certainty. It was about continuing, even when it felt like you couldn't go any further, believing something would be there to catch you. It was about trusting that each step forward, no matter how small, would eventually lead to something bigger. There was no way to avoid the discomfort. You just had to endure it, trusting that would eventually make sense, just as I trusted that my trek to the summit would be worth it. Finally, we reached the summit. The jagged cliffs of Zion spread out before us, illuminated in the soft glow of the first sunrise of 2021. The rocks seemed to hum with ancient energy. The world was so vast and so beautiful, I could hardly comprehend it. I felt as if I had just stepped into a place where time moved differently, where my worries were insignificant compared to the immensity of nature. For the first time in what felt like forever, I felt small, but not in an overwhelming way. I felt humbled and free from my own brain. I realized I'd been searching for peace in all the wrong places. I had spent so much time trying to force answers, trying to control my life and my emotions, that I'd forgotten how to simply be. The climb had brought me face to face with my fears, my doubts, and my desire to control everything. But here, in the stillness of the summit, I found the truth. Peace comes from surrender, not from control. It comes from trusting the process, trusting that the universe and spirit have a plan for me, even when I don't understand it. The sun lit up the peaks around us, and I whispered a quiet thank you to spirit for guiding me through the darkness and leading me here to this moment of clarity. As we made our way back down, the mountain felt different beneath my feet. I had changed. The weight I had carried for so long had lifted, replaced by a new understanding. At that moment, I knew that no matter what happened next, I was ready. I was not scared of 2021. Complex questions, simple answers. In life, the climb is often the part that gets glorified. The struggle, the challenge, the moment of overcoming. We are taught to celebrate the triumphs, the moments where we reach the top. The focus is on what got us there. But my descent demanded a different kind of focus and awareness. It was no longer about pushing forward, but about integrating what I'd learned, applying it to the everyday world as I made my way back to the base. The journey, the continual process of becoming and discovering that faith and spirit are individual, tells me that there is no right or wrong. All that matters is how I believe in the divine within me. As I carefully made my way over the rocky path, each step felt like a metaphor for the emotional process I had just gone through. The physical difficulty of the climb mirrored my internal struggles with all those big questions, but as I descended, I realized that the same strength that had carried me up was now supporting me as I moved down. I wasn't leaving behind the lessons I had learned, nor was I abandoning the peace I had found at the summit. Instead, I was taking them with me, as if the mountain had given me something I could carry within me for the rest of my life. We pause for a moment to remind you that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, 24 hours of programming from over 300 publications, and you're currently listening to the Philosopher Program with your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. And you can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Can we turn now to a book that Mike Dooley mentioned at the end of The Great Awakening, Our Prophesied Transformation and the Attainment of Embodied Enlightenment. He and Tracy Farquhar had co-authored Channeled Messages from Deep Space, Wisdom for a Changing World. Mike says, I invited Frank, a collective she channels from a planet they call Prohashka, to shed some light on the nature of self-realization and to speak on whether or not it's the ultimate goal of our human existence. While the wisdom of their tempered reply was not fully evident to me at the time, as I've grown, so has my deep appreciation for it. Profound, on point, even cautionary, it synchronistically makes the perfect epilogue for and confirmation of the preceding pages, with intriguing insights into the lives of known masters who've graced the face of Earth. And so I ordered a copy for us. It was written in 2017. It's dedicated to the universe in all its magnificent forms. And here is the preface by Mike Dooley. When my mother told me 35 years ago that she just read a mind-blowing book explaining reality, supposedly channeled by a lady in trance whose husband took longhand dictation, I suggested she might be losing it. I'd always been intrigued by the far out, but as an accounting major at the time, I was definitely not into the woo-woo. Mom, however, implored me to read Jane Roberts' Seth Speaks and judge the contents not based on where it came from, but for what it said. I read it. Mom was right, and we read it too many years back. And my life has never been the same. Channeling, in case you don't know, is the ability to slightly alter one's conscious focus to allow the spiritual energy of another, or that of your higher self, to physically communicate through you. There are many other best-selling works whose authors claim to have channeled them, among them the Abraham books, channeled by Esther Hicks, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, channeled by Richard Bach, and countless others. Curiously, many holy books, including the Bible, are accepted by their followers as not written by those whose names appear on the Gospels, but supposedly the Word of God or angels, channeled through them. Channeling has been around forever. I'm going to pause for a moment and tell you that this was sounding very familiar to me, and I had a suspicion about it, so I pulled out a book of his that we had read just a year ago, which was entitled From Deep Space with Love, A Conversation About Consciousness, the Universe, and Building a Better World. And sure enough, this book that I thought was a new book I would share with you is entitled Channel Messages from Deep Space, Wisdom for a Changing World, and it's the exact same book. So, I will continue for now, but please, if you have any thoughts about whether or not you want to hear this one again, or not, please contact the station and let them know. Tell them to email me or call me, very important, and I'll take into account your responses. And I'll think about it during this week and see if we need to go on to something else. But for now, for this week, I will continue reading from the newly named Channeled Messages from Deep Space, Wisdom for a Changing World. And now, dear reader, I've got something that just might blow your mind. Its source is absolutely sensational, even more shocking than what Mom once shared with me. I'd like to introduce you to Frank, a collective of eight beings from a planet 3.6 billion light years away from Earth, in what is considered deep space. To put that in context, many scientists estimate the width of the universe to be 156 billion light years. Frank is channeled by an acquaintance turned friend, Tracy Farquhar, and they, since Frank is plural, not singular, hail not from the spiritual realm as Seth did or Abraham does, but from the physical realm upon another planet, right now. Frank's world, as you'll soon read, is nothing like our world, and they're vastly more advanced than we are in probably every regard, having nearly destroyed themselves millennia ago and lived to tell about it. Tracy is a professional medium and psychic development teacher who began a journey into discovering her abilities in 2005 when she took classes in psychic development at a local community college. As she worked with her abilities, she became even more sensitive. In December 2009, she and her sister were contacted by a collective who identified themselves only as Frank. We are a group of travelers from the Massalonyx galaxy, 3.6 billion light years away. We've evolved a method of soul transference that allows us to visit other worlds. Our energy is comparable to that of a wave or particle traveling from one point to another. We can transfer to other dimensions through controlled thought and meditation. In 2014, Tracy released Frank Talk, a book of channeled wisdom, which, while fabulously mind-expanding, raised many more questions. I've since had the great privilege of posing those questions to Frank. Their answers created the entirety of this book. At first, I simply wanted as much information as possible from these distant and, as you're about to read, obviously enlightened guides. Yet with hindsight, I saw that both the questions and their answers were forming a foundation of knowledge and contrast from which any reader could begin imagining how to build a better world here on Earth. Now, before you shrug this off, I'd like to make a bet that based on your answers to just these three little questions, I'll be able to bring you on board. If I lose, you need read no further. If I win, you'll give this book a try. Deal? 1. Do you believe that our minds are more powerful than presently understood? That we likely have latent conscious abilities that now escape use, such as extrasensory perception, e.g. telepathy or clairvoyance, etc.? Sure you do. You've even had your own supernatural experiences, right? Like knowing who was calling before you answered the phone, your spot-on gut feel, your treasure trove of insights offered by the occasional nighttime dream. 2. Do you believe there's probably life on other planets? Of course you do. To imagine that Earth, among 2 to 3 trillion planets, in the Milky Way galaxy alone, as guesstimated by a few scientific geniuses, the number is not yet knowable, is the only one with life, while it alone has many millions of species, is naive, to be kind. Then consider there are 100 to 300 billion more galaxies, meaning the universe may have 2.5 trillion times 100 billion planets. Statistically, if you could play your local six-number lottery one time for every planet in the universe, you'd win many times. The chance of your winning such is 1 in 14 million, which is to say, hypothetically, if the chance of there being life on another planet is 1 in every 14 billion sampled, arbitrarily comparing it to winning the lottery, which you know to be thoroughly daunting, you'd find life on many other planets. And then there are all the human eyewitnesses, photography, videography, and mysterious ancient ruins that strongly point to our not being alone. And yeah, of course you do. 3. Finally, do you believe that some of the life out there might have developed their conscious abilities to a far greater degree than we have? You have to. I mean, if some can presumably fly spaceships here through technological feats that we can't even comprehend, naturally they'd be more advanced in other areas of creature development. To think that we are the most consciously sophisticated of all life forms that exist upon many planets calls into serious question the intelligence of the life form drawing such a conclusion, proving the likelihood of the point. On board? If so, you're actually ready to go where you're not likely gone before, considering the premise that there are extraterrestrials who've already developed their conscious abilities to such a degree that they've discovered ways to astral project. Google it. To far-flung reaches in space, not only to find us, among others, but to initiate contact. That there are ETs eager to share word of their existence and lessons learned as a species and civilization, solely wanting to be of service. You'd do the same if we were to find an attentive, eager-to-learn, primitive tribe in some unexplored jungle on Earth, heretofore oblivious to the modern world, right? Sure. Some members of the tribe would deny our existence, and some, even if they believed, would probably be riled and not want any such interference, preferring life as they know it to remain unchanged. Similarly, I'm certain some readers of this book, even some who gave 3 yes answers above, will nevertheless be riled by its message and not want any such interference, preferring life as they now know it to remain unchanged. Fine. Yet for your 3 yes answers and the fact that you're still reading, Frank's mere existence is not only probable, but extremely likely to the sextillionth degree. Furthermore, I believe the premises just given, which have been confirmed by Frank, add to this book's authenticity. In other words, while the source of this material is truly sensational, staggering even, Frank's message is not. They haven't singled us out to find rare minerals, harvest our DNA, or consume human flesh, as science fiction films and perhaps Stephen Hawking would have us believe. Instead, Frank's intent is to speak from experience on collective cooperation, community, creativity, imagination, love, and self-betterment. Aliens turn big brothers and sisters. Actually, sophisticated ETs have probably always been benevolent, just not in our movies. Kindness, I would expect, is a hallmark of true sophistication. After all, for any creatures to have patiently developed themselves and their world, emotionally and intellectually, sufficiently to travel space with grace and good manners, no less, whether in their bodies or outside of them, must have required a discipline and maturity largely unknown on this planet. And to address those who think this book is a ruse to line my and Tracy's pockets with money, don't you think we'd sell a lot more copies if we were warning that Frank was after minerals, DNA, and flesh? We'd rather aspire to Frank's sophistication by relaying their insights than try to get rich quick. Not with that we'd mind the latter, but our priority is the former. I deem every word they've offered to be true, for the quality, profundity, and depth of what they share concerning the nature of consciousness. Some of it I already knew to be true. Much of it, however, is unknown to the kind of people who would want to perpetuate such as a hoax. Neither crooked extraterrestrials nor crooked humans would or could make up some of the things Frank has shared with me on the fly. Frank claims they are here on what we would call a humanitarian mission, to bring truth and understanding to those seeking deeper insights on reality, given the exciting energy shifts now apparently and evidently happening on our planet. Frank is not here physically, yet they can be summoned at will by Tracy Farquhar. She, like all channels, has developed her conscious abilities to a degree sufficient for family members in her energetic alignment to find her. Frank is part of her family, and they are here to help and assist individually and collectively, as we see in these words of theirs found later in the book. In the unlimited spirit aspect of our beings, we have been able to witness many historical events on your planet, and it is through the understanding of your planet's evolution that we have been motivated to step in and express our perspective on the direction that you are heading and what could be done to improve that trajectory. When asked how Tracy could reach Frank at any time, I mean, what if they're sleeping or in the shower or mowing the yard when Tracy wants to chat? Frank explained that, like us, they are multidimensional beings, but for their fully developed conscious abilities, they're able to simultaneously lend fragments of their combined consciousness to Tracy, even as they tend to their lives back home. Here are some of the notes from Tracy on how she channels Frank. The method of channeling Frank can best be described as an intentional relaxation. It is best done during a quiet part of the day when there can be minimal interruption and noise. Many times this will be late at night, just before I go to sleep. I enter a state of relaxation with some deep breathing and, through my intentions, allow a space for Frank to come in. There's a sense that I step aside to the left while Frank's energy enters through the right. It is very gentle and subtle sensation when I'm writing, but will be a stronger shift of energy when I channel verbally. In this relaxed state, I will read the question being posed and then close my eyes with my hands on the keyboard of my laptop. The words will come into my head as though they're being dictated to me, and I simply transcribe them as though I were taking dictation. The length of time I can sustain this will depend on how tired I am and my state of mind. Usually after a few paragraphs, I will stop and do a quick edit for typos, misspellings, and word usage, but I will very rarely tweak the verbiage. In a live channeling session I once did, an audience member asked Frank if they could channel in languages other than English, and the answer was quite intriguing. They said that they communicated through frequency and not through language, which means that the energetic frequency they're transmitting to me as a channel is being automatically interpreted by my brain into my native language, which happens to be English. If they were to work with a channel whose native language was other than English, that is how it would be transcribed. This also means that the interpretation will be limited to my own stored vocabulary and word usage. As such, when Frank uses the male pronoun he, for example, when speaking of source or God, this is more of my translation from their frequency than a literal sense of this energy being referred to as male. Other words such as people or person, when referring to their own population, can also be seen as an interpretation of their word for a collection of beings and not necessarily as referring to a collection of human beings. I urge you to take these new ideas one at a time, never accepting anything that doesn't resonate with your own logic and intuition, and when ready to be awed as your mind expands to never-before-known dimensions, prepare to be subtly astounded. Mike Dooley. Introduction by Frank. We are a group of eight intergalactic beings from a galaxy 3.6 billion light years from Earth in a system we call the Macedonics Galaxy, photographed by your Hubble telescope and identified as MACSJO416.1-2403. We've devised a method of thought transference by separating an aspect of our spirits from our functioning physical beings and projecting it through the energy of what you refer to as wormholes in space to communicate through this channel, Tracy. It is our intention to assist you with the huge shift in consciousness that is presently occurring in your atmosphere and to help you use this energetic shift to create the changes that will propel your world into a new age. The existence we experience in our world is unlike anything you experience here, and the physical aspect of our beings is quite different from yours, but our souls are the same, as are the emotional and spiritual lessons we're learning. There's much love among us, as there is among you, and it is at the core of our existence. This love is what drives us to want to help others throughout the universe who struggle with the concepts of love, peace, universal acceptance, and pure consciousness. Well, I think it is a good idea to reread this now. This was not always the case, and it took many millennia to reach this state of grace and acceptance of all. We feel that the wisdom we have gained through the near destruction of our world and the subsequent changes we were inspired to make, which not only saved our world, but created a massive acceleration of spiritual growth, scientific advancement, and compassionate living, can be valuable to those who are willing to listen with an open mind and heart. We feel a great kinship and love for your people, and therefore we feel that our history and wisdom can be imparted in such a way that those who are open to hear it will find the inspiration to shift their own consciousness. We understand that the truth of who we are may be challenging for some, but it is our intention and hope that even those who are resistant to the reality of our beings be nevertheless inspired by our words. It is with excitement that we engage you through the guidance of Mike Dooley, one of the great spiritual teachers of your age. There are not many in your world today who are able to convey universal truths in such a way that audiences are moved to change the perspectives they have on their lives and their world. We've seen that those who follow Mike's work reap great rewards in their own lives, and that others around them also feel the energetic shift that occurs. It is our supreme desire that our combined work will help change the perspective of those who are open to change and challenge the thinking of those who may not fully realize their own power. We know from the experience of our own people that it is only when we are willing to shift our long-standing perspectives that great change can occur. On our planet, we found that with our own evolutionary shift came a need for a greater understanding of our power and responsibilities, both individually and collectively, to create the world we were longing for. It was not in the hands of those whom we had seen as authority figures. It was not within the power of the governing bodies. It was not up to the unlimited power of Source. It was within each and every one of us to recognize our own divinity and act upon it. This book will help you to realize this power and harness it, creating an inevitable sense of peace within, power without, and as a collective energy, a shift toward a more balanced and peaceful planet. There are many guides in your world today who are coming forth to motivate this inspired shift, and it is sacred and divine work they're doing. Regardless of the source, this kind of work is often met with resistance as the masses come to terms with their own ability to create, taking it out of the hands of the unseen and recognizing it as part of their own birthright. There are those who will not understand. Allow them. There are those who will ridicule and attempt to shame. Do not give them the energy of your thoughts or any backlash. There are those who will not be able to hear the voice of truth. Allow them too. We wish that those who read these pages will ultimately see the limitations of narrow thinking more clearly and stretch their beliefs to include that which challenges the status quo and reveals the true limitless nature of the universe. While some may find it challenging to accept the source of these messages, it is our desire that they go within and experience what we have to say as a form of resonance with their inner truth and their highest knowing. If a truth is felt, does the source really matter? We are connected, we are present, and we come with the highest frequency of love and compassion, which we believe will be felt by those who are open to receive it. Listen, feel the resonance within you, and if it does not feel harmonious with your own soul's frequency, we send you love as you move on. But if it does, we invite you to explore this frequency even more deeply. Our messages contain the wisdom of experience and a deep faith in the nature of humanity, which we know has the power and potential to achieve all that we have and more. The messages we bring and the questions we will answer all serve that same purpose. If you want to fall in love with yourself, with your life, with your fellow beings, without having to leave the human aspects of your personality behind, if you wish to maintain your selfhood and all its diverse emotions and frailties, if you wish to allow yourself to sometimes fail, sometimes struggle, and sometimes fail without feeling trapped in despair, choose to explore the treasures in your own heart and mind, as this book will help you to do. Then you will find the inspiration to embrace all of those imperfections while mining the gold from them and working your way toward a richness of spirit that you've never before experienced. We are here as ambassadors of light, and we have come for your benefit, but also to fulfill our own destiny, which is to spread the wisdom of the soul that we have discovered through many trials and challenges. We come as humble servants, and we come with great love and compassion for all of you, your planet, and all the vast array of living creatures inhabiting it. It is quite a remarkable place, and we hope to inspire you to preserve, enhance, and improve it. Great change is not only possible, it is highly probable, and we wish you to understand your great power to direct that change. Part 1. Life on Brahoshka. The aim of my questioning in this section is to reveal the story of Frank's home planet in earthly terms and simple language, its near destruction, subsequent utopian revival, and the challenges encountered along the way. Not that I think we're on the brink of self-destruction, although I suspect 1,000 years from today, this optimism may seem rather naive indeed. Are you similar to us? And this is Mike asking these questions. We call our planet Brahoshka, although our language is largely unpronounceable to you because of the many physical differences in our methods of speech. It is roughly twice the size of your Earth. However, there are many areas that are uninhabitable, leaving limited areas for our dwellings. This is due to the proximity of our planet to our two stars. The extreme heat and dry atmosphere produced by these stars cause some places of barren and desolate land, which we tend to avoid. Our dwellings are largely underground, as we tend to stay out of the heat and light during those times when our stars are at their closest to the planet, and this assists in their cooling, heating, and protection from the elements. When we are able, we return to the surface to perform ritual and rejoice in the heat and light when it is bearable. Our underground dwellings are quite beautiful, with certain types of artwork and representations of our world that make us feel that the beautiful dwelling we have completed is quite comfortable and love-filled. There are many expressions of talent and beauty in the construction of our dwellings. The light on our planet is very bright, as the star that provides it is closer than your sun, and so this creates a brightness to our days which is difficult to explain. This light is experienced as an aspect of the divine, and as such, it can be seen to be like a baptism of sorts when it is very strong. There are many who find it quite beautiful, and our physical reality is sustainable through the resultant heat and light, unlike yours. We worship the divine nature of the light much as some of you worship your God, although we do not have anything like your organized religion. To us, all of life is evidence of the divine nature of the universe, and we find great love and comfort in the aspects of our world that are related to the Creator. There are times in our planet's orbit when we are plunged into darkness, but these times are not at the same frequency as yours, and it is during these times that we have great celebrations to represent the bringing of the light. These celebrations honor our ability to bring light into our lives when all around us is at its darkest, and it is a way that we honor the supreme power of creation that lives within us. These periods of darkness have always been seen as sacred times, and we find great joy in the lack of light and in our ability to light what appears to be empty. Most of our food is grown in vast covered plots, and some of the growth occurs underground. We also collect water from underground springs, and we've discovered many underground bodies of water that ebb and flow just as your vast waterways on Earth. We do not have such vast spaces of water, but there are small ponds and lakes that occasionally appear but then dry up. We're never without enough water, though, as the universe always provides. The idea of food is not the same as what you experience, as we are entirely plant-based and we do not consume any animal products at all. There are certain phytoproteins derived from an algae-like substance that is often dried and powdered and used to create a bread-like food and also used as a thickener and flavoring agent. This is a highly concentrated nutritious agent, which is one of the staples of our diet. There's also a hearty crop of red grain that can be made into a paste and cooked like a cake or bread and left to ferment for an interesting drink or beverage. While we're still dependent on the ingestion of nutrition for energy, there is also quite a bit of energy to be derived from the ample light that bathes our planet from our star. There are times when this light is too intense to be directly experienced, but at other times we are encouraged to spend time in the light as much nutrition and energy is derived from it. In your Earth years, we live on average 400 years. There are those who have exceeded this by up to 200 years, but most do not exceed 500. How old is your civilization? We estimate through our research that our civilization began approximately 4.2 million star years ago, 7.1 million in your years. This predates your human civilization by many thousands of years, and so what seems like advances in our way of life are simply the evolution of culture and technology and the dissolution of those systems that no longer serve their purpose. Such is the evolution of life. Old systems always need to die out to make room for the new. It seems to be the nature of civilized beings, however, to resist change. And so these changes often have many dissenters and sometimes must be gently introduced to those who fear them. Through our scientific, cultural, and spiritual advancements, we've discovered a way to exist as one with our planet and to honor it as though it were a living, conscious being, as many of us believe it is. We have learned that treating all conscious beings with respect and care yields much better results than violence and detention, and that loving assistance always goes further than forcing one to conform to societal structures. These lessons were only learned after many different types of systems were shown to be ineffective and failed, leaving researchers with the task of finding those systems that worked in accordance with the laws of nature and not against them. A plant will not grow without the proper care and nutrients. How can a conscious being be expected to flourish in a system that offers little care and support outside the nuclear family? We pause here as we are nearing the end of our program, and we will continue with this work in the coming weeks. As always, I wish you a beautiful, joyous, and pleasant new week, and I look forward to being with you next time on our Philosopher Program.